Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the lovely, sunny city of Angels. The worst stat in all of sports, we'll get to that. KD in Slim Reaper mode, got to get to that. My laptop, which will not die, we got to get to that. Actually, I want to start there. I really do. I have some thoughts on this latest Raider story in a moment. But first, I want to, I got to tell you this story real quick. Ramos, music, you remember what happened at the Super Bowl 2 years ago in the Twin Cities with my laptop?
Yeah, it was left in an Uber.
Okay, but that's not actually what had happened or what we thought happened, right? Or maybe we did think it was left in the Uber. I don't remember exactly. Our last show in the Twin Cities, we had we were at the Mall of America, and we were in the food court, which is on the third level. And so I had my laptop, and this is one that I got right when I first started working at Fox, so it's 2 years old. And I don't even remember what happened to my old one. When it died, or I just lied. That one got lost. I don't remember. What I do remember is when I got it, and we're at the Mall of America, and we get ready to do the show. And I'm like, "Where's my backpack?" And they're like, "What are you talking about, you idiot? You don't have a backpack." I'm like, "Well, there's all my bags because we were going straight to the airport after the show." And I realized they didn't have it, and I thought, "Well, maybe somebody left." Then we did realize it was in an Uber. I didn't know if I'd get it back, so I went to Best Buy and got a similar laptop and actually used it that day, and I had a basketball game that night. Lo and behold, we actually tracked down the Uber driver. Our boss, Scott Shapiro, who's from Minneapolis, ended up picking up the laptop, or the backpack, whatever, brought it back. Crazy story is, a week and a half ago, I'm at the Final Four. The last night at the Final Four, I had a rental car, so I drive to the show. I had my son with me. We drive to this pregame party. We, instead of parking there, we go and park it at the hotel, and the hotel has its own lot. And I just figured, well, I'll leave my backpack and his backpack in the car because we were leaving early in the morning. Could have run it up to the hotel room. Car gets broken into, and steals our backpacks overnight. And I get a call early this week. Hey, we work for the city of Minneapolis, and we found a computer and an iPad in a trash can, and it has your name on it, and it's locked. Can we send it to you? So fast forward to today, I have the same laptop that twice has gone missing in only in one city in America, and I have it back with me. I think it's a pretty interesting story. The Doug Gottlieb Show brought to you by Farmers at Farmers. We've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba, da,
bum, 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 bum. And Farmers is interesting because they're actually my insurance carrier, and I filed a claim, and now I have to adjust the claim to not include the laptop and iPad that were missing. Instead, I got a bunch of other stuff that's missing. Anyway, they're phenomenal to work with. So, did you guys see this story from Ian Rappaport about the Raiders? So, the story that came out today is that the Raiders sent home all of their scouts because between Mike Mayock and John Gruden, they don't know who to trust. That's the story that was out there. They don't know who to trust, so instead, what they've decided to do is, hey, we're just going to send you all home. We'll figure it out on our own. Thanks, but no thanks. We're out. And so when you hear that story, you immediately think, what a mess. This reminds me of the Trump administration. And not in nearly the bad way that people assume it is. Like, look, there's always turnover in administrations. Granted, people being indicted is a little bit different than many previous organizations, but any sort of news that comes out of the Trump organization, a person resigning to go back into, you know, into their daily life and walk away from it, suddenly is seen as some sort of declaration that it's a mess at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That's the same thing with the Raiders. Look, I've talked to five front offices already, and they've told, all five have said, you know, it's actually really, really normal to not show your scouts the board. To not show the scouts the board. Because some of those guys look at it and they think, wait, you're not taking, you don't believe what I said. You're not taking my word for it. Instead, you're going, this is all I do for a living. And while sending them home and a lack of trust and that leaking out might look bad, the fact is that one of those scouts, and maybe two of those scouts, whoever was sent home, somebody called Ian Rappaport and leaked that story, meaning they were right to not trust him. Right? I can't believe that John Gruden's not trusting us. Mike Mayock's not trusting us. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call Ian Rappaport or text him and tell him what they're doing because they're not showing, they don't think we're trustworthy. Like, hey, dude, you just leaked that you didn't have any info because they blocked you from seeing the big board. Of course, and you're not being trustworthy. Of course they don't trust you, you dope. So I don't think this is even, this doesn't rise to the level of any sort of interesting story to me. What is interesting is that any sort of story out of the Raiders becomes a big story. And the only thing I can draw that back to, and the only possible logical explanation as to why that's interesting is because of John Gruden's contract. Right? Everything you do is judged differently once somebody knows how much you make. We've discussed this several times over. From Parade Magazine to NFL to NBA to college coaches, once we know what you're making, we judge you totally different. I can't believe that's what we get for $10 million a year. You kidding me? That guy makes $25 million a year. He should be out there playing. Right? There's a cost associated with whatever we assume to be the perception of your potential and the likelihood of success. When that's not really the way in which it works. Right? How much you make is not necessarily determined, and mostly not determined based upon if we think you're going to be successful. It's based upon the market. You're paid what the market will bear, period, end of story. Remember, the Raiders had to, one, get John Gruden out of the TV world where he was making $6, $7 million and didn't have to work much during the week. And didn't have to work much during the offseason outside of preparing to know every name and stat for the NFL draft. So he had a lifetime appointment to be the color guy, Monday Night Football. He was going to make more money. So you're going to have to pay him more money than he was currently making to get take a harder job, to walk away from a cake job. And you had to give him more years. You had to give him some sort, and he had to give him some sort of security. And the team was moving to Las Vegas, so you wanted to make sure that he felt secure through the move. John Gruden didn't get paid 10 years somewhere in the $100 million category because they expected to win a certain number of Super Bowls or do it. No, it was because you had to give him more years, you had to give him more money, and you had to backload the deal because the Raiders didn't have the money to when they got into Vegas and they became stable. But we associate the amount of money he makes with, well, he's got to be better than everybody else. When we don't even know what Bill Belichick makes. No idea. Do you know how much he makes? I don't. It's not released. Not the way it works. Most people think it's in the $12 to $13 million, and he's worth it, I guess. Could he command more? Of course he could. But once you find out what somebody makes, it dramatically changes you. It just does. I've brought this up so many times, and it's really sometimes a hard translation to somebody who hasn't gotten a newspaper, but Sundays, if you get a Sunday paper, you know that there's a pullout called Parade Magazine, and once a year, they have the What People Make. And you'll go through it. It's like a day's entertainment. Wait, a spiritual healer makes $45,000 in Wyoming? How do they live? Like, well, you know, it's Wyoming. How much do you need? But who makes them? Who are they spiritually healing? A stockbroker in Chicago makes $500,000. That sounds like, I really like Chicago. An insurance salesman in Austin, Texas makes $70,000. Sounds like a lot of money in Austin. It's not as nearly as much money. So John Gruden and Mike Mayock send home a bunch of scouts. Guys are going to get rid of anyway. Their jobs are, in fact, done. This is a non-story. But it's only a story because it's John Gruden, much like any of these stories that come out of the White House. If it was from any other position of leadership in the United States, we wouldn't discuss it. But Gruden's become like Trump. Any news, good, bad, neutral, becomes front page news. And my guess would be, the logic behind why it's like that is because of how much money he makes and how many years he makes that much money. And we don't know years and money, and we haven't seen contracts like this in professional sports for guys that run franchises and coach teams.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I've told people for the better part of 2 years, Kevin Durant is the best player on earth. About 2 years ago, during his first year, 2.5 years ago, his first year with the Warriors, he seemed to buy in defensively to using his length, blocking shots, becoming a more active player. Now, it didn't sustain itself the entire year. It wasn't like he was Bruce Bowen out there locking dudes up every night. But he had become a much more engaged defensive player. And he had to be based upon the fact that the Warriors, what they do defensively is as important as what they do offensively. But it's my understanding that the sale to Kevin Durant was a good one from Golden State, which is, hey, look, you can keep fighting this battle in Oklahoma City. That's your place. You got a good team, got a good organization. And some years, eventually, you're going to get there. He almost had us beat last time. But if you come to our place, we're going to get there every year. And unlike when you play in Oklahoma City, you don't have to always beat two or three guys to get to the basket or get to a pull-up jump shot. And oh yeah, by the way, it gives you a clear path to matching up with LeBron James in the NBA Finals every year. Do you think you're better than LeBron James? And Kevin Durant, without any question, believes he's better than LeBron James. The only way to prove it is on the same floor during the NBA Finals when everybody's watching. And you know what he did? He proved it. Now, people will get caught up in the, well, they had 73 wins the year before. They didn't actually win, but they did have 73 wins. Well, you got Steph Curry, and he might be, oh, okay. Steph Curry's great. He's a two-time MVP. No one is arguing his greatness. But there were two players that played the same position. They guarded each other, and one was pronouncedly better than the other in the second half of probably 4 of the 5 games in both years. Know who that guy was? Kevin Durant. And it's funny, what happened 2 nights ago with Kyrie Irving happened last night with Kevin Durant. We're like, oh, Kevin Durant's awesome. That's why everybody wants him to leave the Warriors and go to the Knicks so the Knicks can be awesome. Because when he was with the Thunder, they were awesome. Now he's with the Warriors, they're awesome. If he went to the Knicks, they'd be awesome. But if you are, and I won't name names, but one rhymes with Solon Lauherd, and suddenly you're throwing out, hey, Kevin Durant's the best player in the NBA. You know what I think? It's a hot take. He's the best player in the NBA. You're the guy that's like, hey, there's this really cool place called Buffalo Wild Wings. You can go and drink some beer and eat some wings. I know you've never heard of it. It's a small little joint. And they have like all the games on. You're like, oh. And you remember Chuck E. Cheese when we were a kid? There's a place called Dave and Buster's. Kind of the same thing for adults. And you know, ooh, there's a TV show. It's on HBO on Sunday nights called Game of Thrones. You should totally check this out. Like, I'm not sitting here telling you I was first to the party, but it feels like I was at least on the first bus to the party. Whereas guys coming around now, we're late to get to this thing. We just are. We're late to get to the, hey, Kevin Durant, but yeah, he's been the best player in the NBA. He has. And he can, in fact, turn it on and turn it off. That's actually the skill to it. Where he can like, yeah, you know, this game, depending on how they play me, I'm just going to feed and let everybody else get it. Take a listen to Steve Kerr after the game last night.
He had a different mindset tonight than he had the other night and set a tone right away. And our guys loved it. His teammates were excited about the way he started the game. And I think that was infectious and carried over to our defense, too. I thought our defense was fantastic tonight.
Yeah, I mean, he just decided to go like, hey, and I said 60-point game kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I basically said, like, look, there's going to be a game like this where Kevin Durant goes like, you know what, I'm just going to decide, I'm just going to go when I want to go. And I'm going to be a good teammate as much as I can, but every once in a while, I got to remind you who I am. This is, pick your favorite guitarist, and they're like, every once in a while, fellas, I know we got to get to the playlist, but I'm going to go on a 10-minute guitar solo just so everybody knows that I'm Slash, right? I'm sure Slash does that. They're like, yeah, Slash, we got to move on. I'm like, nah, they need to know they came to a Slash show. Last night, Clipper fans need to come. Like, what is all the Kevin Durant? Oh, he can score whenever he wants to. Like, literally can just, he can get a shot off. And I was trying to be nice before. Now I'm not going to be nice. Right? It's the same people that thought Matthew Dellavedova could shut down Steph Curry. Right? Eventually, guys figure it out. You know, first couple games, the officials were like, wait, how do we call this thing? Like, you know, Patrick Beverley's kind of fouling him, not fouling him. And then all of a sudden, Durant kind of pushes him and he falls down. Like, how do we, finally the refs are just like, you know what we're going to do? We're not going to call any of the, we're not going to call any of the push-offs. And we're going to call the initial fouls and give them a little, because people came to see that guy play, not the little Nat playing defense. And eventually, Steph Curry waxed Matthew Dellavedova. And eventually, that's what happens with all of the LA Clippers. So if you're late to the party guy, like, it's okay. You're like, hey, there's this new kind of clothing for women. Lululemon, they got some guy stuff too. Super comfortable, a little pricey. Like, yeah, half my wardrobe, Lululemon, we're good. Not telling me much. You know, there's these new AirPod things. They're really hot that Apple has. They don't even have cords. Wireless headphones. Wireless headphones. You're like, thanks, dude.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Lamar Hurd is a color analyst for the Portland Trailblazers games. Also a longtime friend of mine, played at Oregon State, and tremendous at his job. Lamar, I'm wondering, when Nurkic went down and was out for the year, I don't know, on mic, off mic, what did you think for this team?
Well, the first thing we thought is that's going to be a huge blow to any type of run the team might be able to have in the playoffs. We didn't think that automatically that the team would be counted out, but we just knew with the void that he filled in the middle, both offensively and defensively, that's a tough ask for any of the remaining centers to fill that void. Honestly, Doug, we didn't know what to think. Of course, everything was grim that night just by nature of the injury. You know, guy's leg snapping right in front of you. That'll break anybody's spirits. And it just took a couple of days for everybody to, I guess, I don't even want to say get back to normal, because I don't know if normalcy was restored that quickly. But we had to hit the road, go on a road trip immediately after. And, you know, it was our darkest plane ride of the season. For players, coaches, media, everybody. It was a tough time. But in that road trip, the team ended up going 3-1, bouncing back. The leadership of Damian Lillard really made itself obvious. Guy stepped up, and his cancer becomes the starter. And ever since Ennis has been in that role, along with Seth Curry, who was also a starter at times, he's played big minutes. CJ McCollum was out for a while. Seth Curry has picked up his play. Rodney Hood. So that's a roundabout way to answer your question, is saying it was grim. We didn't know exactly what to expect, but guys ended up stepping up, filling the gaps, and the team is where they are now because of everything that I just talked about.
Yeah, and no, it's pretty amazing what they've been able to do. And it's a little bit of, honestly, they decided, let's just go with some offense, right? Like, like Seth is not a great defender, but he can really, really shoot and can pass. And then Ennis Kanter, who, you know, I mean, Oklahoma City's whole game plan is let's just go at Ennis Kanter as much as possible. But he gives you, frankly, more offensively than even Nurkic gave you, right? So they kind of shifted to let's go offense. Let's try and stabilize it with offense instead of defense, correct?
Well, I will say this, two things. You're not all the way off, but I don't know if I fully agree, and this is why. There were times when Nurkic was with Ennis offensively, but to your point, there were some times when Nurk maybe would cast a ball in the paint, throw up a shot that his teammates, his coaching staff would deem a little bit soft. And you rarely to never see that from Ennis Kanter. So Ennis overall is a better option offensively consistently, but Nurk was tapping into some of that stuff. He had some really special nights. But as it relates to Seth Curry, you're exactly right. I mean, Seth has been a dead-eye shooter all season, number three in the league in three-point percentage. And his defense hasn't been as bad as I think people would think from the outside, and that applies to Ennis as well. Right. You know, Ennis had a rap coming into the team that he was a guy that didn't even put forth the effort defensively. Well, that's not the case. He's putting forth the effort. He doesn't have the impact that Nurk has. Nurk was elite at what he did in protecting the paint, protecting the rim. But Ennis has put in the effort. And his teammates, you know, they've made up for places where he is deficient. And that's where you rely on Zach Collins, who maybe is the Blazers' best defensive center with the guys remaining. Even Myers Leonard in his spot minutes that he's played, he's been really good. So I agree with, I guess, the overall sentiment of what you're saying. But I would say Seth has been better than I think people expect it defensively, and Ennis as well.
Did Myers Leonard survive the plane flight? Because he's the one who didn't call screen, right? When Stephen Adams almost decapitated Damian Lillard. Lillard was mad at Stephen Adams, but I'm sure they're like, dude, that's Myers Leonard's fault. I just want to make sure he's okay and he's safe.
Yeah, Myers is safe. I'm sure they talked about it afterwards. For anyone who doesn't know, Myers and Dame, they came in the league at the same time. They were part of the same draft. So those two guys, the two longest tenured Blazers on the roster, you know, that's not the first time something like that has happened. So they know how to go about it and talk about it and make it right moving forward.
Yes, but you and I have both been guards.
It'd be a problem. Oh, no. We're going to have a conversation.
Yes.
We're going to have the conversation. And I'm sure, Doug, before, I haven't asked Myers this, but I got a strong feeling that before Damian even had to say something to him, Myers went to him and said, My bad.
Here's my per diem. My bad. Lamar Hurd joining us, covers the Portland Trailblazers for a living as their color analyst. Are the Thunder taking bad shots? Are they not making good shots? Is the pressure of the moment? Like, what's your look? They're not a good shooting team, and any of us who've watched them, like, there's a flaw in the construction of their roster. But they're not this bad of a shooting team. Why do you think they've shot so poorly?
I've said this, Doug, ever since I started in this job, in this role. You know, you hear the phrase, it's a make or miss league, and I don't agree with that for all teams. Because I don't believe that all teams can get the shots that they want when they want. The Blazers are one of those teams by nature of the offense they run and the freedom Terry Stotts gives his guys, and then the backcourt that can get the shots whenever they want to. Well, OKC throughout the regular season, they were a make-or-miss team as well because Paul George is playing like an MVP every time he played the Blazers. He averaged 38 a game against the Blazers. He shot 45% from the three-point line. In bulk, I'm not talking about two or three made threes. In the four games, he made 17 out of 37. So he was able to get his shot anytime, and as he made them, OKC found success. Not only PG, but the Thunder as a team, they shot right under 40% from the three-point line in the regular season. The Blazers, on the other hand, shot 28.5% from the three-point line. So that's a huge reason. That was a big deal why OKC won the regular season series 4-0. Now you add to the fact as well, the two games at OKC in the regular season, it was the second night of a back-to-back for the Blazers, so they're coming in there fatigued, playing against a team that leads the league in steals per game, turnovers forced per game, second in points off of turnovers. That's a recipe for disaster for the Blazers. So what's happened so far in games one and two of the playoffs is all the numbers I just talked about flipped. Now it's the Blazers who are lighting it up from the three-point line. Damian Lillard, you might have heard this number already. Dame has 9 3-point shots made on the series so far. OKC, as a team, has 10. They have been historically bad in their first two games. So they're getting the same shots, Doug, that they got in the regular season. They're just not making them. People thought it was because of Paul George's injured shoulder in the first game. In the second game, Paul George looked pretty good. He even kind of flexed, literally, after a shot made, as though to say, I'm all right. You know, I'm back. It's me again. But it just wasn't enough. And a big reason for that is, really, right now, the Blazers' backcourt is just completely outplaying OKC's, and then the Blazers are still getting those contributions from that supporting cast that I talked about stepping up once Nurk went down.
Hey, man, enjoy Oklahoma City. I know you got it. Tomorrow's a day off. Should be an interesting night at the peak, and appreciate you joining us.
My pleasure, man. Good to talk to you.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Ethan Strauss covers the NBA for the and the Warriors for The Athletic. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Here on Fox Sports Radio. Let me welcome him in. And Ethan, what was your reaction to how KD played the first two games of the playoffs?
My reaction was that he didn't seem like he was at his most engaged. And I know that in the aftermath of this, he's saying that all that happened was the Warriors drew up some new plays for him. I mean, maybe that's slightly true. I don't think that's overall what occurred. But he didn't seem incredibly engaged. He was in that background role, that facilitator role that he was doing in the last few weeks of the season. And that can work in the regular season with so many weapons on this Warriors team. But in the playoffs, and the defense ratchets up, you get fewer system buckets, and they kind of need KD to be KD, the guy who we all know who he is, and that's what he was last night.
Was that you who asked him the question about how he was playing when he said, "You know who I am? I'm Kevin Durant." Was that your question, or was that somebody else?
No, I think that might have been Mark Medina. I can't quite recall who exactly. He had an exchange with Medina, but no, it was not me. I did not ask that question.
But he did give a thoughtful and kind of thorough answer, and it felt like look, he's been asking to keep it to basketball questions. That was a basketball question, and he gave it a legit basketball answer. So do we take him at his word that, like, if you ask him what he deems to be a legit basketball question, he'll actually be thorough in his response?
Well, I don't know about any of that. I don't know about what qualifies as a basketball question and what doesn't qualify as a basketball question. He tends to get basketball questions after these practices and at these shoot-arounds and whatnot. It was a detailed answer. I was laughing a little bit. I don't know what your reaction was as somebody who knows the game pretty well. I was laughing a little bit about how much of media reacts when a player in this context uses some terminology and says top-locking, and they go, "Oh, my God. Oh, he's explained why. Oh, he's revealed exactly why what's happening is happening." The Warriors did not feel that way. They just wanted him to bust Landry Shamet and Patrick Beverley. And that's what he did last night. And it's what he was fully capable of doing when he wants to do it. And this is why he is so great and also such an enigma. You don't know why he does what he does. You just know that when he wants to do it, nobody can stop it.
Was that fun for him last night? Did he seem like it seemed to me like he was having fun.
Yeah. Sometimes when he's been dominant, there's almost been a sneer to it, or not even a smile. It looked like he was smiling last night. It looked like he was getting a lot of gratification out of performing after the stage was set, after all the obsessing over him versus Patrick Beverley and everything else. It seemed like it unburdened him. I do wonder if it unlocks him a little bit, if he finally gets what he maybe hasn't been getting out of this season. In the postseason, now more of the focus is on him. And I think another aspect of all of this is we're not talking about LeBron right now. LeBron's not in the playoffs right now. So there might be a bit of a heralding of Kevin Durant like there hasn't been before. If he keeps coming with the energy he came with last night, I could see such a thing happening, and I could see him feeding off of it.
How do you think the DeMarcus Cousins injury affects them?
I think it makes it a little less tricky for him to get his offense. Those two weren't exactly the best fit on the floor for whatever reason. I remember in Houston when Durant did not play that game, that's when Cousins went off. It seems that there's only so much basketball to go around, and the Warriors added another scorer to the starting lineup, and that seemed like a great idea. It seemed almost like when you put a hat on a hat, that it was almost too decadent. And I think it's a little easier for Kevin Durant to find his offense with Andrew Bogut on the floor than with DeMarcus Cousins on the floor. That doesn't mean that the Warriors love that this devastating, awful injury happened. It means that they can't use Cousins in the specific matchups that they might really benefit from, in addition to how it's just awful for him on a personal level and for the people who know him. But as per Kevin Durant, I think that it's just easier for Kevin Durant to get his offense when flanked with Bogut.
Okay, but can Bogut's body hold up, right? Like, he looks, everybody's like, well, he looks really good. He's moving really well. Like, okay. But there's a reason that he was allowed to walk out the door. There's a reason that the Lakers, who loved him as a teammate and as a guy, cut him. As good as he was in Australia, you know, they didn't win the championship in Australia. There's other things I know that play into that. Like, when they get to legit high-level Rockets series, what can we legitimately expect from Andrew Bogut?
Yeah, that's always going to be a concern, and that is why when Cousins goes down, it shrinks your margin for error. That's another reason why it's concerning, that if anything happens to both those bigs are pretty important right now, Bogut and Looney, and if something happens to either of them, you could be in a bad way against a better opponent than the Los Angeles Clippers. So while DeMarcus Cousins did not fit as well as maybe the numbers said, the offensive numbers, because of the defense, it wasn't there. The plus-minus had something to say about that. His going down, I think, might put the Warriors in a bad way against teams that could potentially bully them. But here's the other thing that mitigates it a little bit. Some of those teams, they're not looking so hot. You know, they got Bogut in part because they anticipated a playoff field that would have Rudy Gobert, that would have Jokic, that would have Steven Adams. Right now, it's not looking like they're going to have to play any of those teams, so they might have dodged a bullet in that respect.
I agree with you. On the other hand, last time they matched up with the Rockets, wasn't it DeMarcus Cousins who demolished the Rockets?
That's very true. That's a DeMarcus Cousins, though, again, when KD wasn't there, which gets the ball in his hands and he's more comfortable, and he was just dominating PJ Tucker, and he was dominating Capella as well, and it seemed like they could get something out of that matchup. But against the Rockets, they can also go small. You know, in the Western Conference Finals, they played Capella off the floor, so it's still a matchup where they can have some success, and I don't think it's a matchup where they necessarily need that brawn inside as much as they do against other teams. It's going to be tough no matter what, though. The Rockets are really good.
Yeah, they are. They are really good. There's no question about it, and I think it's going to be fascinating to see how these two teams match up, because the Rockets are not the same as they were last year. Some parts are better. Maybe they're deeper, but I don't think their starting lineup is as good. But they might be playing their best basketball. On the other hand, maybe the Jazz just aren't that good. So I think there's several different layers to it, no?
I think there are a ton of layers to it, and it's going to be a fascinating series if it happens. I shouldn't skip to when. I should say if, because things can be a little unpredictable in the playoffs. I think the Rockets, they have to be hungry. They've been beaten by this Warriors team a few times now. They were so tantalizingly close last time. And this Warriors team, I don't think, is as together as past incarnations, even if they looked completely unbeatable last night. So that's the NBA Finals, as far as I'm concerned, if it happens. That is the NBA Finals right there in the Western Conference semifinals. It's a little weird to have it so early, but that will be the toughest challenge, in my opinion, if healthy, that these Warriors face. I think first-time finals teams are often completely out of sorts. It's an underrated factor. They so rarely win when they're playing a finals team that has been there before. So I don't expect the biggest challenge to come from the East. I do expect the biggest challenge to come in the Western semis.
Let me ask you about Steph Curry. Last year, he wasn't fully healthy the entire playoffs. Previous years, he hasn't been fully healthy. He did kind of tweak his ankle right at the end of the season. But am I wrong to think this is the healthiest he's been at this point in the playoffs in a couple of years?
Yeah. I think he looked great last night, and really we didn't notice because the stage was set for I'm Kevin Durant. That was the main story and the main takeaway. And it was hard to talk about anything else. You know, I wasn't going to write about how Andre Iguodala and Kevon Looney shut down the Lou Williams pick and roll last night. That just was not the story. But Steph looked fantastic, and he's looked, I mean, other than the end of that game after he got that long bench period in the big 31-point comeback, over the three games, he's looked fantastic. And that's got to be encouraging to a lot of Warriors fans. And it just shows you that when KD is engaged and when Steph is at the peak of his powers, it almost just does not matter what else is going on.
I know it's hard to look inside Kevin Durant's head. Any sense for what's going on in terms of his future?
I mean, I said what I said, and I got yelled at when I said it, and I haven't really heard anything to change my story on it. Most league insiders expect him to go to New York. That's what has been subsequently reported on, and what people have said since that point. Now, maybe you could see some scenes from last night and wonder if minds could be changed. You know, you see Rich Kleiman sitting with Maverick Carter. You wonder what they're talking about. You see Kevin Durant going back and forth in a friendly manner with Bob Myers and with Warriors owner Joe Lacob. You wonder what they're talking about. And so there's always that chance. If the decision rests inside the mind of a man, there's always a chance that whatever has been agreed upon can potentially be changed. So you never want to say that it's done, that it's finished. But what I reported on, what I wrote back in February, I don't see any reason to change on that.
Ethan Strauss, he covers the NBA for the Warriors, and I believe is writing a book currently on this. For the Athletic, for the Warriors. He covers the Warriors for the Athletic. It's Friday, Ethan. I apologize to you. It was a fun game last night. You can follow him on Twitter at Sherwood Strauss. That's with two S's at the end, Strauss. Ethan, great stuff, man. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy your weekend.
You too, man. Thanks for having me.